Today is a uniquely interesting shiur. Now, last week we finished up Minhag, we dealt with the Nachlat Shiva, and then we dealt with the Klal Halacha Kabat Ra'i, which, of course, there's a difference when there is Smicha, when there isn't Smicha. One thing is certain, that those that had the original Smicha Rishmi Piyish had a unique status, and that status no one else has, and we cannot argue with those that had that original status. But once we come into the Bitul HaSmicha, then we say Halacha Kabat Ra'i, and the concept is that we have to depend upon the Shofet Asheyeh Bayomim HaHeim. He saw the early material, and he decided accordingly. And the Mashal that's given, and I showed you the Shibali Lek, and I showed you the original source, the Mashal that's given is dwarfs standing on the shoulder of giants. And even though we're dwarfs and we don't come to the early generations, but nevertheless, when we stand on the shoulder of giants, then we can see much better. And then we got involved with the Ramah. The Ramah is based upon a Marik, and it's the question that everyone alluded to. What about if Kitvei Yad are discovered, Kitvei Yad that the earlier generations did not see? And if these new Kitvei Yad are discovered, then of course our question is very simple. Had they seen, they might have not paskened that way, and it overthrows the whole concept of the dwarf standing on the shoulders of giants. Now, this question, interestingly enough, the Ramah paskens lahalacha that we do have to take in consideration the Kitvei Yad. Again, it has to be seen historically, because at the time of the Ramah, the Kitvei Yad that were discovered were few and far between. In other words, at the time of the Ramah, when Kitvei Yad were uncovered, it was, I would use the word, it was more an accident than a dedicated search. But in modern times, where you get involved already with Wissenschaft des Judentum, and we've developed all these abilities to find the Kitvei Yad, and we know where to look, and we go to libraries, and we even you know, the terrible problem, see, something you take for granted. Imagine before the 1800s, how did you know what a library had? The whole concept of library science was alien to the Jewish world. Can anyone tell me who was the father of Jewish library science? Moritz Steinschneider. 19th century, he was the first one to develop a method for cataloging manuscripts in Kitvei Yad. He worked with the Bodleian Library in Oxford, and it's only through catalogs that you start to learn what's available. But once we learn what's available in the 19th into the 20th century, thousands upon thousands of Kitvei Yad have been discovered. There's so many variant readings. When you take a look at the Mifal, there's a certain Mifal in Yad Rav Herzog, which I don't know how much progress they've made, but they've put out certain Gemaras with all the variant readings. And when you compare what you have today, for instance, with Dukdikei Sofrim, which is practically 100 years old, so Ein Mala Hashvat, there's no question that today the Kitvei Yad multiply like amoebas. And this is why it becomes a problem, and this is why the Chazon Ish has to deal with it. Now, what's amazing about the Chazon Ish is that you have to know the background of the letter. And this letter in Chelek Aleph, Lamed Bet, as I explained, is written to a Talmud who had published the Sefer, and the Chazon Ish evidently criticized the Talmud because of his attitude towards Kitvei Yad, and he seemed to prefer modern Kitvei Yad over the standard Gersa. And the Talmud defended himself by saying that he's doing nothing more than the Vilna Gaon, than what the Vilna Gaon did. And here, the Chazon Ish takes him to task, and he says, how do you compare yourself with the Vilna Gaon? And the Vilna Gaon was on a very unique level. And that part of the letter is very important from a different point of view. It's very important from the point of view of the homachloket between the Chassidim and the Mitnagdim. Because when you look at the attacks of the Mitnagdim upon the Chassidim, basically, the attacks were made because the Hasidim changed halacha. And it's true, we cannot deny that the Hasidim changed halacha. No, those of you that live according to the Vilna Gaon, there are so many Sfarim written on the Maisa Rab. There's one Sefer Maisa Rab, and there are other Sfarim. And the Gaon changed the halachot to hundreds, later to thousands. That there isn't, if you live according to the Gaon, there is nothing you do in any aspect of Judaism that is normative. And no matter what aspect you take, even Hanukkah, all of you know that the Vilna Gaon held that the Chiyuv of Neirot is to light right at Shkia and the first half hour. And he held if you light after sun, it, light after the stars come out, according to the Gaon, you can't even make a bracha. Once a half hour goes by, you have to say to Koach Kochavim, according to the Gaon, you can't make a bracha. If you live according to the Gaon, all of you know you take 2 months at Leil HaSeder instead of three. And it, there isn't an Indian in Yahadut. If you live according to the Gaon, there's no Indian of taking a new pre for the Shechiyonu. The Gaon held its Vaday Shneikt Kedushat, and certainly you need a Shechiyonu. You know what I'm talking about? This, the famous story of the Balabas. It's written in the Maaser Rav of this Balabas. I gave a talk last Thursday to a group in the center of city. So Friday I got a large basket of fruit. In the basket were all types of exotic fruit that you can make a Shechiyonu on. And a Balabas came over to the Vilna Gaon every Rosh Hashanah and he gave him a pineapple. You know how much a pineapple is worth? You know what it means? A pineapple in white Russia and Lithuania in a cold climate. He gave the Gaon a pineapple. Must have spent a fortune on it. Why did he give the Gaon the pineapple? So the Gaon should have an exotic fruit in which to make a Shechiyonu. No, do you know the story or not? You should all know this is a Maaser Rav. So what did the Gaon do? He cut into the pineapple immediately and made a Shechiyonu. The Balabas fainted. The guy spent, for the sake of argument, $100 buying a pineapple to honor the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon cuts into it. And the Vilna Gaon told him, what are you getting upset about? I paskin that it's Shtei Kedushot. If it's Shtei Kedushot, there's no Sveika, no Safek. It's not Kedusha Chrichta. You certainly have to make a Shechiyonu the second day. And the Gaon said, you bring me a new pineapple. If you bring me a pineapple, there's a chiyuv in Shechiyonu. Mitzvah bol yotcha al tach mitzenu. So I made the Shechiyonu immediately. And everything, the Vilna Gaon made so many changes. There isn't the Purim Suda. When did the Gaon eat the Purim Suda? New Barry, when do you eat the Purim Suda? In Muncie, what do they do about the Purim Suda? The Purim Suda, you all eat the Purim Suda? 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, you daven Mincha Gedola, and then late in the afternoon, you start the Purim Suda on Purim, you finish up Shushan Purim. The Vilna Gaon ate the Purim Suda at 10 o'clock in the morning. He said, where's there a head to be a vatel from Torah in Shushan Purim? And everything the Gaon did, the question, of course, how could the Vilna Gaon attack the Hasidim if the Vilna Gaon made so many changes? And here the Chazon Ish is very important. Because what this Chazon Ish is saying is that essentially the Gaon had an authority of a Rishon. And he walked them on the rear from the Rambam. That's the Chazon Ish. Bekedushato, bepishuto, behatmadato, bechachmato, belamdenuto. Whatever beautiful words the Chazon Ish used about the Vilna Gaon. But one thing is for certain. He gave the Vilna Gaon a status that was like the Chazon Ish, that was like a Rishon. Now, I can tell you in parentheses that if you argue with a Chassid and you quote this to the Chassid, you quote this Geret of the Chazon Ish, you're absolutely not going to get anywhere. Why, Avi? Because the Chassid will answer you very simply. Just like you think that about the Vilna Gaon, that's what I think about the Baal Shem Tov. So just as the Vilna Gaon could make changes, the Baal Shem Tov could make changes. So I'm telling you this in parentheses, but this is the Chazon Ish. If I argue with a Chassid, I take an entire different approach. My approach would be, Mark, that Eino Chinami, the Vilna Gaon, made hundreds and hundreds of changes, but on the halachic scale of 1 to 10, all the changes the Gaon made aren't even worth a 1, aren't even worth a bag of beans. Let's look at it halachically. So what's the big deal that you take 2 matzot instead of 3 matzot? What's the big deal that you eat the Purim Suda at 10 o'clock and you don't eat the Purim Suda at the Chveis 4 o'clock in the afternoon? It's not overwhelming. You follow what I'm saying? But you Hasidim went and changed. Didn't they write the Zmanei Tefillah? Imagine a Chassid wakes up and he says Kriyat Shema 10:30 in the morning when Sof Zman Kriyat Shema 7:30. Those already are major changes. You went and changed the whole Nusach Tefillah to Al Titosh Taratimcha. In other words, I would argue with a Chassid, you go, what about Shmini Atzeretz and Chutz Laaretz? No, Jay, tell me, what do you do? Shmini Atzeres and Chutz Laretz. Where do you eat? Where do you eat? Shmini Atzeres and Chutz Laretz. Where do you eat? No, tell me. In the sukkah or in the house? Yeah, you hear that? Jay says he eats in the house. He's a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, and it does the change of generative bounce, repetitious descendant of Hasidim. The Gemara says openly, Mesechet Sukkah, Tafman Zayin Amad Aleph. No, Yetiv Yatvinen, Baruch, Lomar Barchinen. The Gemara says openly, it's Sveikah Diyomi, you follow me, Shmini Atzeres, and Chutz Laretz, Shmini Atzeres, Midiraita, Muda Rabbanan, it's Yom Acharon of Sukkot. So the Gemara says openly that you sit in the sukkah, you eat in the sukkah, the only thing is you don't make a bracha because of the safek. No, the chassidim came along and there isn't a chassid who goes and eats in a sukkah and shmini atzeret. Some of them do HaKadosh Baruch Hu a favor, they make kiddush in the sukkah. Others only make kiddush shmini atzeret's morning and then they go in for the meal, they don't even make a real kiddush, just the kiddush arafa. But that's the way, you follow me, Jay? When I argue with a chassid, I can't cite the Chazon Ish. Because the Chazon Ish, I know very well, Levin Bartel say to me, big deal. The way the Chazon Ish views the Vilna Gaon, we view the Baal Shem Tov. And then the argument becomes circular. You can't curl out of it. But this is the first part of the Igaret. What's very important for us is that the Chazon Ish gets involved with the Kitvei Yad and he says, how do you know that they're right and how do you know that this is the correct one and who knows which Kitvei Yad we'll put into Geniza? And then he says, he speaks Labriot, he speaks about the Mesorah. And Yaakov Levinstein, who the older fellows are all the way with their families today, Yaakov and Jerry and Larry, everyone is on a Tiyul the first 2 days of Hanukkah. But Yaakov said to me that, look, here the Chazon Ish is the heart of Litvisha learning and logical thinking, and even the Chazon Ish ultimately has to become a mystic. And he speaks about the Kabbalah. And I don't know if this is mystical, but there's no question in my mind that a person has to respect the Kabbalah, has to respect the Mesorah. And it's, there's a Hashgacha Pratit here. Take a look, Rashi and Tosfot and the Rambam and the Ravid and the Mechaber and the Ramah and the Shach and the Tnaz. There were so many Svarim written. And for every Sefer you can imagine, first you take the various Levushim, which was written to rival the Shulchan Aruch. But nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch was Zoicha, the Ramah was Zoicha. There's a certain Kabbalah, there's a certain Mesorah, there's a certain Shalshalat HaKabbalah. And this, I have to say, is Hashgacha Pratit. Kol Tului B'Masel, look at it whichever way you want. But this obligates us. And this is why I heartily agree with the Chazon Ish that we cannot overthrow the Mahom Mesorah. We can't go around hunting for Kitvei Yad and Shita Techuyat and Shita we didn't know, and suddenly we're going to put everything together and we're going to have a new Mesorah. To me, this goes against the heart of Yahadot. Well, then you'll ask me, how does this compromise clinical investigation, scientific investigation, graduate school investigation? And I'll tell you, it's a very delicate question. I'm not, I cannot tell you, you know, I don't belong to the black world and I don't espouse black philosophy, and a lot of what I learned in Lakewood I accepted, part of it I didn't accept. Although I can see if the article I cited last week from Moshe Bleich is a Lakewood boy, then Lakewood is a lot different than it was in my time, which of course is natural. If you have over 1,000 students, it cannot be as monolithic as when you have 100 students. And Reb Aaron Cutler was Reb Aaron Cutler. With all due respects to the present Rosh Yeshiva, from what I hear, there's nothing to be overwhelmed as far as their learning. They don't come to Reb Aaron far from it. Reb Aaron was Reb Aaron, all right. On the other hand, Yiftach Bedaro, Shmuel Bedaro, I understand. But I'm not here to tell you, don't engage in investigation. But I'll only say the following to you, and I didn't spell this out last week, but when I spoke with Yaakov, I told him this, and he felt it was important. When I was in graduate school, this issue was widely debated. Because you have to remember, in the 30s, into the 40s, into the 50s, no one questioned freedom of research and freedom of inquiry. It's YU, it's the Western world. But by the 1960s, Lakewood already showed that you could have Torah in America without the Western world, as if to speak, without Bernard Rebbe graduate school, without Chochmat Yisrael, without Wissenschaftlerstudentum, and already by the 1960s, the Rav himself had raised great Talmidim, Talmidei Chachamim, who had little to do with Wissenschaftlerstudentum. For the sake of argument, I don't think Rabbi Lichtenstein has ever been involved with scientific Jewish scholarship. As far as I know, I don't know, you fellas here, he's Shayurim, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I've never yet seen Rabaran speak on scientific Jewish scholarship, publish on scientific. So this debate began. So I remember they came to Professor Feldblum, who later becomes the nemesis of Schechter in the late 60s into the 70s. Tremendous, the yeshiva shakes, the debates that went on between Rav Meir Simcha Feldblum and some of the yeshiva faculty. But I remember Rav Meir Simcha Feldblum said something which always guided me. And then I heard it from others. Whenever you get involved with people who are in Chochmat Yisrael, who are Talmidei Chachamim and Bnei Torah, said something very fascinating. And he said as follows, that when it comes to research and Kitvei Yad, I'm totally free. I take a total scientific approach. Exactly lahavdil, if you go into the laboratory with biology or with chemistry and you're doing research for the sake of argument, who here's a medical doctor? For the sake of Mark is a medical doctor and he's doing research, and when you go into a laboratory and you're doing research and you're working with a new drug and a wonder drug and you want to see the results, you are totally free, totally honest. Nothing influences you. You're not interested, yet you have to be, in other words, nothing, whether the drug will work or the drug won't work, you have to be totally honest. You cannot think, oh, if I say this drug works, the company will use it and will make money and then people will jump for the drug. And then on the other hand, imagine you've put 20 years of research in, chas v'chalila, you should falsify results or fudge results. A scientist has to be totally honest. So Rav Meir Simcha said, that's exactly the way I do my research. When it comes halacha lemaisa, all my research has no relevancy. Because there, I have to follow the Mesorah. And that was a very fascinating approach that I personally like that approach very much. I'm not telling you that the Rav Heschel Schechter or others signed on the dotted line, but I personally found that to be a very enlightening approach. And I don't have any difficulty with that approach and the Chazon Ish. Einoch inami, when you have to search and you have to check and you have to look and who knows what the Vatican has. And Halavai Rabbi Lau would have gotten permission to check the Vatican out thoroughly. Because remember, Rabbi Lau went to the Pope and he's still being criticized. And unless the Vatican does a major gesture within the next few months, I would say Rabbi Lau's trip was in vain, and if anything, was disgraceful, because we Jews don't have to go crawling before the Pope. If anything, the Pope has to come crawling before us. We didn't kill Christians, and the Catholic Church has a long history of Jews they killed directly or indirectly from days of yore right through the Holocaust, and everyone knows what I'm talking about. But we have to search and check and look. Halacha lemaisa, I think the Chazon Ish is absolutely correct, and this is Mesorah. And this is why I had the big debate. I'm only elaborating, I said this to you last week, but in the early 70s, I remember that the debate went back and forth, for whatever the reasons were, right here in BMT, not in this room, not in this building, it was with this building didn't exist yet, but right in the BMT building, I was getting involved with this problem, and in Itri, one of the leading lights there was dealing with the same problem. And he came up with a chap that if you discover Rishon in the year 1994, it's not a Rishon, it's an Achron. And I couldn't accept that. Ribbono shel Olam, because the Meiri had bad mazel, and we only discovered the Kitvei Meiri in the 20th century, does that mean the Meiri isn't a Rishon? But I like my approach better, that there's a certain Hashgachah here, and Rashi and Tosfat and Rashi and Tosfat. And the Ritban, the Rashba, and the Miri didn't enter into that picture. That's the way the Hashgacha willed it. But it's not to say that the Miri isn't a Rishon. Okay, I don't know if I'm right or wrong. I can only tell you this is the way I feel, and this is the way I think we have to understand the Chazon Ish. Well, I'm being asked if we discovered him, would it change halacha? No, I would accept the Chazon Ish, though we don't overthrow the halacha because we discovered a Miri. But I'll come back to it. I'll take an intermediate position and validate myself much later. But for the time being, let me just say that if we discover Meiri, I wouldn't overthrow a psak of the Mechaber and the Ramah and the Magen Avraham. You understand what I'm saying? And the Taz, I wouldn't overthrow it because we discovered a certain Shita Tamiri. Okay? Now, Yaakov said something else to me after class, which is basically true. And he quoted this in the name of his late father-in-law, who was a Rav, who was a Talmud Chacham, who was a Musmach of Rav Price of Toronto. This is, if those of you from Toronto might recognize some of these names. His father was Rabbi Rosenzweig. It was a brother to Beryl Rosenzweig, an uncle to Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig. So his father-in-law said something that's also very interesting. With all that we have discovered and all the Kitvei Yad and all the variant readings, we have not yet discovered one revolutionary concept that overthrows Mesorah. In other words, when all is said and done, about the most we've come up with is that Psikreshid lo nichalei or Psikreshid nichalei, there are mekilim among the Rishonim more than we thought. But halacha lemaisa, we've yet to discover anything revolutionary that overthrows the Mesorah. And I dafka looked in the new Steinsaltz edition, because I'm learning Yerushalmi and Shabbos, I devote some time to Yerushalmi, so I'm learning Peya. And I don't have to tell you that Yerushalmi is very difficult. The text is difficult, the Aramaic is difficult, it's a different Aramaic. It's not the Aramaic of Bavel, it's the Aramaic of the Galil. So even though we have learned Aramaic all our lives, and all of us in this room are masters of Aramaic, willy-nilly we understand that Aramaic text perfectly, but it's not Galilean Aramaic, it's Babylonian Aramaic. So I'm learning Peya. It's the one Yerushalmi that came out, the Steinsaltz edition. It's a very fine edition and very easy to learn with it. You know, the words dance before your eyes, you don't have difficulty. But I looked at the variant readings just to see, there's so many variant readings if you take a look on each line. But I looked through the variant readings. There's nothing of any consequence. The question of above here, above there, the if it's written in full, written not written in full. So, to a certain degree, when all is said and done, it's with all the freedom of inquiry and scholarly research, I cannot say that anything major was found which overthrows tradition. Now, I want to show you the Chazon Ish. That was one letter. Twice in his chidushim on what was put together, you know that the Chazon Ish basically wrote on all of Shas and all of the Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, and wherever he wrote, he left Mar Makomet. Now, what was put together on Yoredeya and on Zrayim, twice the Chazon Ish has exactly the same letter dealing with this problem. Why he published it twice, I don't know. But it appears word by word, and it's a magnificent document. Chazon Ish to Yoredeya, it appears, I'll give you, I don't even know how to cite it, what would be the easiest way to cite it, but where it talks about Chazon Ish to Yoredeya, Kvod Rabo V'Talmud Chacham, when he deals with the covet coming to a Rebbe and a Talmud Chacham, Siman Kuf Nun, subdivision Chet. Right there in subdivision Chet, he deals with this problem, and it's you'll see in capital letters it says Mechtav. That's one place. The other place is the Chazon Ish to Hilchat Klayim, Siman Aleph. Right in the middle of Siman Aleph, he says Mechtav. It's set off in the middle Mechtav. And you'll see exactly the same letter. But I'll quote it from Yoredeya, and it's just an amazing letter. And you see, what he's dealing with here is the heart of Psak. And he says, do we have to follow the concept of Rov in Paskening? I mean, after all, when you deal with the Mishnah Brura constantly added up various shita. Those of you who learn Mishnah Brura simply know it gives you the feeling you add up, you subtract, you see the way they stand, and then you're able to decide. So he here develops the idea
that Rov plays no role in the history of halacha once the halacha is determined. In other words, a beitin, when you're dealing with the very question, that's where Rov plays a role. Acharei rabim lahatot, we're involved in the question where the beitin, we have to paskin, we have to reach a decision, Rov plays a role. However, beyond that, Rov plays no role. There it's up to the Rav, it's up to your mind, it's up to the way you think, it's up to the way you understand. You are totally free to act, to paskin, to decide in accordance with your understanding. And Rov plays no role. And he says, "V'yotam hadina sherov haTorah shebiyadom humi rav echad umitamidav umitamidei tamidav al simber rabim af b'makim sherabim hacholkim." It doesn't matter at all. "V'biyom machronim shesfam yuchadim sherabotainu lakhu chela kikari shemesiret haTorah ledorot hanochachot kama rif rush ramban rashban ritbaran." And he goes on and on. "Heim hayu harabanim hamufchakim shel hadorot. Kol makom sheish plukta ukramu eikan hachroat koach harov haya hadavam masul hachra'a lechol chacham ola hachmiya ola livcha b'yechidim yuduim lalechet achareihem b'makom shelo hukhra hadavas safek." And what the Rambam here, what the Chazon Ishi says, is crucial to understanding the whole history of Torah Shebaal Peh. And what he's saying is very simple, that any individual has a right to paskin the way he wants. If it's something that they were not machriya, something where there was not haskama, something where there was not hiskum aleim kol Yisrael, something where the beitin didn't stand up and take a vote on, and now the issue hangs fire, anyone can decide what he wishes, and he doesn't have to be influenced by the rov. There's no rov out of beitin. And just give me a second, Tevin. No rov out of beitin. And he goes on, he says, look, you can take a, for the sake of argument, a school of thought. Take a school of thought that, for the sake of argument, we spoke about the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon had many students through Reb Chaim Volozhin. And all of Volozhin essentially were Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon transfers over to Brisk. And all of you know that the Rav had endless chumras based upon the Vilna Gaon. So you'll come along and say now, for instance, my middle son-in-law lives according to the Vilna Gaon. By the way, which is very healthy, I have to say, I admire the way he's raising his children, because my grandsons already know there's machloket, it's not that one's better than the other, we do this way. My grandchildren asked me yesterday when I light Hanukkah candles, so I told them, I don't do like your father. I know that your father lights with the sunset right after Mincha, like the Vilna Gaon. I said, I do like the Shulchan Aruch. I like right after Marv. So they understood. They could accept it. They understand. Kids of 8, kids of 6 already understand. It's a very healthy attitude. That's not monolithic. But you don't have to be concerned that the Rov is against the Vilna Gaon. That does not matter at all. This is your Rebbe. This is your school of thought. Rov doesn't play a role here. This is the way they were machlit. This is the way you have a right to live, a right to understand, a right to follow. And he says something here that's very important too, that you see that certain individuals became the Rabbanim Hamufakim, that this is like a Hashkacha Pratit, and we have no right to interfere with their opinions. They're the Rabbanim Hamuf Hakim. And you don't have to put things to a vote. And you have a right to follow whom you want. And if this is the way the Masorah was passed on, you follow your Masorah. Don't be upset by the concept of Rov. And others can say that if it's a Talmud Chacham, a Rebbe, a Rosh Yeshiva, and it's Talmidim, they count as one, they're just following the Rebbe. It doesn't matter. We don't put it to a vote. Rov is not the factor here. And we have to follow the Masorah as we have it and as we understand it. And we can depend upon our own seichel. We don't have to be overwhelmed by counting heads. And just let me go one step further. And he says something else. And how do you know, again, when it comes to Masorah, how do you know where the Rov really was? He says, we don't know what everyone said. We don't know what every Talmud Chacham said. We don't know every Sefer. Not every Sefer was raised, was printed. And he, this is crucially important. Ulechein, Ein Hadin Mishtaneh, Kashem Matpisim, Kitvayad Hadashim, Vinehapach, Hamiyut Lerov. And he says, this is why we don't have to worry when they find new Kitvei Yad. And people are going to come along and say, hey, wait a minute, the minority now became a majority. The majority now became a minority. The Chazon Ish says, no, you don't have to be concerned with that because you'll never know where the true majority is. So many Sfarim weren't printed. So many Kitvei Yad didn't reach our hands. So many Sfarim were lost. So many Sfarim were destroyed by the church. So many Sfarim were burned by at the stake. So many times we see Rishonim quoting viewpoints in Kitvei Yad and Trivet that none of us saw. And how can you say the Rov and Miut, you'll never know. And therefore, don't be overly influenced by Kitvei Yad. And number one. Number two, again, you depend upon your own thinking. Rov plays no role here. And he says, sometimes you can't help yourself. You like to look at the rov sferim and you add up shitat, like Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. But the Chazon Ish says, that's not my way. My method is to depend upon the main Svarim whom Hashgacher has singled out, the main Svarim that have become the Yevan HaBasis, the backbone of the Torah and the Masorah. And he says, Mikomakom, Im Kiyenanu Nigashim Lachriya Bein Rishonim Bachra Sichlit Muchleket, Mikomakom, Mikomakom, Mitlut Tamid Bachra'a Iyun Sichli Avei Pomim Machriya Maranzal Kachada Deirat Bipnei Shudrem Mechuvarim Biyoter Umit Yashvat Kala Kushat. And even though he says, who are we to make decisions when the Machloket Rishonim? But he says, nevertheless, we have to depend upon our Seichel. Doesn't the Machabe do it? Ukefisha Rinu Rabbeinu Ein Lanu Lazov Et HaShimush HaSichli V'Aleinu Lisad Et HaMishkal HaGadol Al Hekesh HaSichli Shehu HaMalech Bein HaYotzea U'Bein HaYitzua. And there, of course, the Chazon Ish, those of you that have studied the Chazon Ish know that he wrote a beautiful, magnificent, poetic Hebrew, and there's a beautiful example that our own Seichel is the angel that connects the Creator with His creature. And when all is said and done, we must depend upon our Seichel, upon our rationale, upon our logic. And this Chazon Ish is overwhelming, crucially important. We who live in this generation have every right in the world to paskin, to depend upon our Seichel, not to be overwhelmed by majorities that may be against us. We have a right to follow whom we want, and we have to know that we cannot overthrow the Masorah, regardless of how many Kitvei Yad will be found. Who knows that we have them all? Who knows that all the Shitat, so we'll find another few Kitvei Yad, but there's so many more we didn't find, so many more we didn't uncover, so many more we don't know of. There's no Beit HaGadol today. You can't have a formal vote. Rov plays no role at all. And this Chazon Ish, I have to tell you, it gives you insight into the Chazon Ish as well. Because the Chazon Ish was very unique in his psakim. He never went along with the majority. He always thought out and did what he was correct. On Shviat, you have a classic example, where the Chazon Ish was machmir in many instances, make heal in others. He never sought total acquiescence to his psak. He worked it out and did the best he can logically. This will explain to you the Chazon Ish in one area where he was very heavily criticized. I'll explain to you why. I've often spoken about this, but it fits right in to the Chazon Ish's thinking. One area. Does anyone know the area where he was very heavily criticized until today? Yeah, exactly. Until today, he was never forgiven. Why? Because when we deal with theory, you deal with theory, fine. It's not pikuach nefesh. Barry hit the nail on the head. In 1941, when the Jews were thrown out of those that took the Kobe route, you know what I'm talking about, that ultimately wound up in Shanghai. So in 1941, hundreds of B'nai Torah reached Kobe, Japan. And all of you know that Yom Kippur was coming. And there the tremendous question came, did they cross the date line? Didn't they cross the date line? Do they have to fast? What day do they have to fast? And the whole question was, do they fast Wednesday? Do they fast Thursday? Was a terrible problem. And there the problem was exasperated by the fact it was halacha l'maisa, not like Shviyat. Shviyat may be a terrible problem halachically. Halacha l'maisa, it's not the end of the world. Everyone can find a solution. We're dealing with that. The most of the Rabbanim b'zman hazeh, there isn't a person in this room that's going hungry because it's a Shemitah year. There are people, Amayaretz, in America, who think they can't come to Israel. I had this when I was in America. Last summer, people asked me if they're allowed to come to Israel during the Shemitah year, how are they allowed to eat any of the fruit? That's what people ask me. Shemitah year is like Shabbat to their minds, primitive minds. Shabbat, you can't do any work. Shemitah year, the ground has to rest. You can't eat any of the fruit, can't eat any of the vegetables, can't have to starve. So, all of you know, none of us are starving, none of us are samach on that, they're not samach on that, it's a bait in, eating b'kedusha, buying the hydroponics, gush katif, it is kedusha, of olei bubble, isn't kedusha of olei bubble, buying from the Golan Heights. There are so many different solutions. No one is going to suffer ill health from observing the Shemitah year, whichever way he observes it. However, when it comes to Yom Kippur, you have to fast. Do you fast one day? Do you fast 2 days? Imagine fasting 48 hours. And there was tremendous pressure. And the Talmidei Chachamim, the Rabbanim, the Mira, remember, these were yeshiva people, didn't know what to do. They were overwhelmed. And everyone sent questions to Eretz Yisrael. And finally, the great Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, and then there wasn't such a pilug like today, there wasn't such a cleavage, lo aleinu. Then the chief rabbinate with Rav Kook, and Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, and from the poskim of Yerushalayim, Rav Tukachinsky, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and everyone was called together to have a meeting and to give an answer. And the Chazon Ish refused to attend. And the reason the Chazon Ish refused to attend is exactly what we read a minute ago. That Rove plays no role. The Chazon Ish said, what do you mean you hold the meeting? This is unheard of. What are you holding a meeting? What are you putting it to a vote? We don't have a Sanhedrin. Each Talmud Chacham has to paskin in accordance with his mind, in accordance with his seichel. And he refused to attend. And he was severely criticized because the wind-up was that that everyone who came to the meeting paskened one way, the Chazon Ish paskened another way. It came out, there was a whole question, do you fast on Wednesday, do you fast on Thursday? And because it was a machloket, the Chazon Ish, with so many other gedolim, but yet the Chazon Ish in the yeshiva world was considered the posek achron, Newberry, what finally happened? Many of the Mira that were able fasted 48 plus hours. The first day they fasted, it was Yom Kippur, Wednesday. Thursday, the Chazon Ish Shita. If a doctor said they could continue to fast, they continued to fast 48 plus hours. So it was like a yom and a half. The second day, they didn't do malacha. They had a daven chol. They couldn't daven Yom Kippur again. But ad kedei kach, whoever had this sheila halacha l'maisa. Now, what the Brisker Rav's Shita was, Ad Hayom, there's a tremendous machloket. Did he agree with the Chazon Ish? Didn't he agree with the Chazon Ish? Of course, Rav Velvel was in Yerushalayim already, 1941. Tremendous machloket. When Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll get to my shirim on the international dateline, I'll try to show you what I believe the Brisker Rav really held. But this was the Chazon. He was criticized because it was Pikuach Nefesh then. They needed an answer. And everyone knew that if the Chazon Ish does not sign along with the other Rabbanim, Tamira Yeshiva boys are not going to listen to the others. They're going to be in doubt. Their hearts, they're going to be troubled. They're B'nai Torah. And I knew Al Tamira who told me they fasted 48 hours. Those that couldn't fast 48 hours, a pochet mikushir on the second day. But the Chazon Ish's actions, when you see this michtav, he was totally true to his own thinking. And this michtav is a classic example, a classic concept of the Chazon Ish, his thinking, had a paskin, and it's absolutely true about the Chazon Ish's approach. When he felt he had truth, nothing else bothered him. And he wasn't involved and concerned with a rove and a majority. Tzibayat didn't upset him. This was his approach, halacha l'maisa. Evan, yes. So what you're touching upon, Evan, is asking me, isn't there a difference in your dar if you say what you want, and what about if you have a psak from early generations? It comes back to what I said weeks ago, and I'll come to it later today. If there's something with Eskimo Aleim Kol Yisrael, where there's consensus, then you can't overthrow a consensus. But well, again, if there's a consensus that the 10 poskim against one were right, then you cannot overthrow them. If there was no consensus under certain conditions, we're going to come to later this term, you perhaps have a right, the poskim like the yachid. We're going to come to that. But consensus is the key word here, not rove. There's a difference between rove to consensus. Okay? According to the Chazon Ish, Rov plays no role outside of the baking B'shas Maisa. And yet many times, and we're going to come to this, many times the Mechaba left leeway for you to paskin differently. And this is what the Chazon Ish is saying. That ultimately, it all boils down to the Posek and his mind, and we're going to talk about this in great detail when we deal with the Shach. Well, obviously, you're absolutely right. If Rabbi Heschel Schachter comes along the year 1994, and he paskins against Rabbi Yitzchok Chanan, the Sholom Meshiv, and the Netziv, he better know full well what he's doing. I agree with you, and we'll come to that. But that's what the Chazon Ish is saying, that in theory, you have every right to paskin the way you want, and you don't have to necessarily surrender your thinking because the majority seemed to be against you 100 years ago. But I had on the postscript, it's only as long as the issue hangs fire. Once there's consensus, you can't overthrow a consensus, no matter what. Including a Ktav Yad. Yes, Avi? Yeah, because consensus, we'll come to that later today. I'll come back to that later today. I spoke about it, I'll come back to it later today, so hold off on that, okay? Okay, any other questions? Now, I want to show you something else. There's a Rav in Borough Park, I think he's called the Ugurva Rav, if I'm pronouncing it right. He's a very interesting individual, I have to say. I'll tell you. Do you know his name or not? Rav Menashe Klein, Rav Menashe Kotten. He signs every tshuva, Menashe Kotten. Rav Menashe Klein, did he mean anything to you? Shevet uchevet Mishnah Halachat. It's Mishnah Halachat or Mishnah Halachat? Like, the joke is, call him Mishana Halachat. I'll give you a drop of background on in 1 second. And he's a very interesting individual. I'll tell you why. He came out with certain psakim against the Rove, like against Reb Moshe, like with the Erev in Brooklyn. He actually was in favor of the Erev. And he was never forgiven. So he's a very interesting individual. On the other hand, he has a great following. He's a Holocaust survivor, went through the Shiva Maduri Gekenim. A very fascinating individual. I've never met him, but he once saved me from a minor catastrophe. Did I ever tell you the story with Eli Wiesel? It's an interesting story. I never told it here. I must have told it earlier, yes, but very interesting story. To raise money for Shvat Ami, we've tried everything, including publishing the Rakasat Aharon. But among the things we tried, we once had a dinner in Yerushalayim, which is very successful, but it took so much work, we never repeated it. And we got to be the guest of honor at that dinner, Eli Wiesel. And this was arranged months in advance. Between the time we arranged it, Eli Wiesel wins the Nobel Prize, right? He won the Nobel Prize. So this dinner now became a world-class event. We had problems with the government. We had to take in joint sponsorship because Shvat Ami, suddenly the government put pressure on us. And their Russian Jewry organization got involved. We wound up having three different sponsors. But it didn't matter. It was a very successful, beautiful dinner at the Ramada Renaissance, if I remember correctly. So there's all this publicity. And suddenly I get a letter from Hillel Goldberg. Some of you know the name, the editor of, he had written books. He's a late bloomer. He got started very late, got a doctorate very late, learned with the Reverend Boston, lived here for many years, then he was called back to America. As I used the word recalled by his family. Of course, his father died. They needed someone to take over the family geschäft, the family business, which is the Intermountain Jewish News, a very successful local Jewish newspaper. So I get a letter from Hillel Goldberg maledicting me. How can Shvat Ami honor Eli Wiesel? He's this and he's that. And he's finding a whole litany of faults with Eli Wiesel. So, I don't know. First of all, my first reaction was, this guy has a lot of chutzpah sitting in Denver and giving us Musar in Jerusalem where we're desperately trying to raise funds. Number two, I don't know how familiar Wiesel is, but we're honoring him as Eli Wiesel. Who were childhood chavruta before the Holocaust. So I got that article and I wrote back to Hillel Goldberg. I wrote, "Dear Hillel, before you criticize Aaron Rakefet, why don't you criticize the Ugavarav?" And I see enclosed article. "After you've written to the Ugavarav, please write to me again, and after you've written to the Yugav Rav and gotten his answer, then write to me again, and I'll be happy to justify my actions. Your old friend, still in Jerusalem, Aharon Rakefet." So I always love the Yugav Rav, because Kaliyachayad, he saved me from the fangs of Hillel Goldberg. Now, he's a very fascinating posek, and someday I'll give a whole shiur just on his psakim. He's very fascinating. I don't know how many of you are familiar with him. He's very prolific. Must have 8 or 9 halakim already. Chelet and Shivet, Mishnah Halachat. Okay, I'm quoting here from Chelik Zion, Siman Perach, Pesh Peresh Chet. And this is a shiur he wrote in Brooklyn in 1976. And he's dealing with the same problem, that after all, Hagam ki vadayim nimsa gedolei rishonim shlo ruach ronim maz kaimelon ki rishonim the godol tziponim shel rishonim mikisam shel achronim. And he says it's true that the Rama paskins that if you turn up with a ktav yad from the rishonim that the achronim didn't say, so we certainly have to say, perhaps the halacha can be like the Rishonim, their fingernail was much bigger than our entire stomach, where we're lowly achronim. Kiyim yimatzei lafamim eisek tayim shen yudurim, ein anu lismoch aleihem. Ki nomad abekiven, the bekivun dachu otam rabbanu peinu aposkim. Obish mishabeshtahu v'lo yadu mibetin mi yatsu hadvarim. And he's getting involved now, and he's saying, and this is a continuation of the Chazon Ish, and he's saying, look, you find Rishonim, you don't know who wrote it. You don't know for sure, maybe this was a Shita Dechuya. You don't know for sure, maybe it was a mistake. And you can see that he's starting already to take the attitude, you cannot overthrow the Masorah. And I'll go further in a second. I just want to tell you a beautiful story that I've told so many times about the Rav. And I think the story says everything that the Mishnah Halacha is trying to say. And it's a true story. I heard the Rav tell the story twice. Once in the 50s and once again in the 70s at a Yachei Kala. And the Rav says that a great choker, one of the people involved in Wissenschaft, I think that the Rav was telling the story about Shmuel Kalman Mirsky. This is my own gut reaction, because of all the people in America who were involved in Kitvei Yad, the Rav was most intimate with Professor. You've heard the name Shmuel Kalman Mirsky? Again, it's a new generation. Professor Mirsky of the Bernard Revel Graduate School, the rabbi of Baruch Park, I've spoken about him many times. He was a bucking shas. He was a Yerushalmi kid who came to America. The man's knowledge was unbelievable. He put out the Shiltat. We're talking about Mirsky's Shiltat. He put out the Shiltat. Many others from. He was a fixture in YU until his death in the late 60s. So evidently, if I'm right, Professor Mirsky comes to Rabbi Soloveitchik and he's all excited, and he says, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I found the Ktav Yad from the Tkufat HaGoinim. They found something, let's say for the sake of moment, the Cairo Genizim. And the Ktav Yad says that a Kohen is Nisa and too much Sheretz. You know what that means? Tell me, is a Kohen allowed to be Matami himself to a dead body all year? What's the answer? Absolutely not. Is he allowed to be metame himself to a dead sheretz? What's the answer? Absolutely. He'll become tamei, he'll become tamei. So he'll go to mikveh, he'll follow the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, he'll become tahar. So Professor Mirsky, assuming that's whom the story is about, is all excited. I found a Gon wrote that a Kohen is Musar and Tumat Sheretz just like his Musar and Tumat mate. It's revolutionary. It overthrows the Masorah. So the Rav said, what did I do? I said to this professor, what do you think of he said to him, for the sake of argument, what do you think of Professor Orbach? At that time at Hebrew University, the leading professor was Ephraim Elimelech Orbach, for the sake of argument. So, Professor Simcha Sat, these were great names at Hebrew U that you should be familiar with. Great names in Wissenschaft. So, you should know, professors hate each other. So the Rav said that the professor he was speaking about started yelling and shouting and cursing him out. He's an Amoritz, he's a boy, he's an ignoramus. That professor doesn't know anything. His scholarship is all faulty. So the Rav said that when he got all done maledicting the other professor, I said to him, no, who says that all the Talmidei Chachamim, all the Goyim who lived at the time of the Goyim, who says to all Talmidei Chachamim, this was written by someone who lived at the time of the Goyim, who's an Amoritz, who is like that professor you are maledicting right now. And that's exactly what the Rav answered this professor, who I think was Professor Mirsky. And it's a sharp answer. And that's exactly what the Mishnah Halachah is saying here. You get a Ktav Yad. How do you know who wrote it? Maybe it was rejected. Maybe it was an Amoritz. Remember, everything was in Kitvei Yad then. Nowadays, there's a difference. Imagine they're going to discover Nathan Goldberg's notebook of the shurim he heard and all his notes 1,000 years from now. They may not be overwhelmed by the notebook, because they'll say, in the year 1994, this was the notebook of a young man listening to shurim, which he may or may not understood in time. They're going to discover his notebook on a von Lichtenstein shurim. You follow me? But if anything is worthwhile today, they publish it. But 1,000 years ago, everything was in Kitvei Yad. So the Vilna Gaon, so the Rav said, what are you getting all uptight about? Who says the Mishubashtagi, he was like a professor, he didn't know, he made a mistake, it was refuted. And this is what the Mishnah Halachit says. And he says, and then he goes further, he gets wound up, And he says, I don't like what's happening today, that they look for these old manuscripts and they take tremendous headlines and they think they're going to overthrow our entire religion, and then the Rishonim and the Achronim and everything that happens subsequently is to be overthrown. And then he quotes the Chazon Ish. And he says, look what the Chazon Ish says on the Geniza, and he quotes the letter of the Chazon Ish, and we have to have Hashkacha Pratit, there's a Kabbalah, there's a Mesorah, there's Ishmi Piyish, Ubifrat, Onu Mizera Ashkenaz, Ashe Kabbalatena Mukubalat Yotemi Anshe Sfarad. And he says, after all, the Rush himself said that the Kabbalat of Ashkenaz were much stronger and much clearer than the Kabbalat of Sfarad, so our Kabbalah, which is Midar V'dar Achron Shebi Achronim, Lulachain and Mishuhumad Alegala Harim, the Kapetzalegvahat, and King Hasele Kabbalat Achronim, the Ainlo Kabbalah Klau, Ulachain Paratunsha, Rishonim on a Shultim, the Nefakbia Faraglaim on a Midafkim, Vial Kabbalat Achronim on a Samkim, Kasha Yishal Ishburm Vetumim, he called the rain the very Kabbalah, Ishmi Piish, and his words, he waxes more poetical and more poetical and more mystical and perhaps more irrational. But when all is said and done, I absolutely agree with him that, and this is the follow-up of the Chazon Ish, and this is the Mishnah Halachat, and Chas v'Chalila, we should walk around with fear we're going to overthrow the whole Mesorah, and Shabbat won't be Shabbat, and Kashrut won't be Kashrut, and Tarat Mishpacha won't be Tarat Mishpacha, and a Kohen will suddenly be Musar on a Sheretz. We can't throw out the Mesorah. This is what all of Torah is based upon. These are the Rishonim, these are the Achronim, and we have a Kabbalah Ishmi Piyish, and we have to live with this Kabbalah. And Kitvei Yad, it's not that we're against them, not that we're opposed to them, but they cannot totally eradicate and denude or emasculate the Kabbalah that we have on our hands, Meshech Kol Hadorot. And this is the Mishnah Halachat, and he's in total agreement with the Chazon Ish. Now, I'll show you. Yes, Mark. Listen, I'm going to deal with the Rambam in just 1 second. I'm going to show you with the Rambam who differs with this. You're right. See, it's not black and white. You're right. A Ktav Yad signed by the Rambam that he went over the Ktav Yad has to have infinitely more validity than Stam, a Ktav Yad that you don't know who wrote it, that's Favrofen in the Cairo Geniza. So it was from the Tkufat HaGaonim. So what? It was Nathan Goldberg's great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather taking notes on a shiur he heard from Rabbeinu Shfiragon, and in the middle of the shiur he fell asleep, and then Ribbono Shel Olam, with all due respects. You understand me, Barry? Said the Rav. I have to say that the Rav had a very sharp Lithuanian cynical sense of humor. I heard a story. Someone just came back from Boston. So they told the following story. And it's a typical Rav story. It's so beautiful. You have no idea. You have to have known the Rav to appreciate this story. A kid came in after Havdalah Saturday night. And a college kid. He walks over to the Rav. He says, Rabbi Soloveitchik, please give me your bracha. And the Rav looks at him and says, Rav, are you an apple? Are you an apple? You understand? So the same thing here. The Rav put the knife in. This guy came, Kohen, Musar, Al-Tumat, Sheretz. And the Rav asked him, what do you think of that professor? And after the guy finished cursing him out for 5 minutes, the Rav said, no, the same thing. After Tkufat HaGaonim, this Ktav Yad is from a guy who was an Amar Ritzabur, and all the words you said about that professor apply to the person who wrote this. Now, you know who takes issue with this to a certain degree? Rav Ovadia Yosef. And here you get involved with the Rambam. And there's no question that the Rambam, in addition to his Mishnah Torah, so many Kitvei Yad were left, so many Tshuvot. Even today, we still find new Tshuvot from the Rambam. And well, you know, it's gone through so many editions. Pe'er Hadar. Remember, I quote the Pe'er Hadar already? That was the first collection of Tshuvot of the Rambam put out in the 1700s. Pe'er Hadar. Very primitive, but put out many of them from the Arabic. Now, the Pe'er Hadar came out with a new edition edited by Reb David Yosef. Reb David Yosef here in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Avadya has a flock of sons, as you know, some who agree with their father, some who don't agree with their father, but that's a different story. In politics, his sons are not of one echad, they're not of one shnit, as we say. But when it comes to learning, he has many sons that are big lamdanim. Reb David and Reb Yaakov are very fine lamdanim among his sons. So Reb David put out a new edition of the Peir Hadar. In addition, you find new kitvayat of the Rambam. This was Lo Aleinu, Avram Chaim Freiman, Hashem Yikom Damo. Remember, I spoke about him. He was killed in the convoy going up the Har Tzofim in 1948. He put out the Chivat of Rambam, I believe it was 1935. Then so many new Chivat came out that nowadays, whose edition of Chivat HaRambam do we use? Professor Yoshua Blau, the three-volume edition, the magnificent edition put out by the Mekitzin Yedomim Society. It's the finest edition. Look at it. You'll see what he did with the Rambam. It's unbelievable. But even Professor Blau's edition, there's now an addendum to that that Professor Blau put out because more Sfarim were discovered. So you're constantly finding new things with the Rambam. Now, in the Reb David Yosef's edition of the Peir Hadar, which came out in 1984, his father wrote an introduction. And the father, it's a long, very interesting, very fascinating introduction, where he goes in to the Kitveyat and to the importance and the Chivar, and he says, Im Hadava Mavua Lehefech, but Chivat HaRambam? Yesh Tivsol Kalachala Maasek Divrei HaRambam. Kiilu Yadu Maron Vachronim Shadat HaRambam, but Chivar Lehefech Medivreihem, Hayu Chazrim Behem, Umevat Lim, Daitam Bifnei Dato Hagadola. And he says that if the Mechaber paskined against the Rambam, because he didn't know the Rambam, in other words, he paskined something which the Rambam didn't discuss in Mishnah Torah, but nowadays we find the Chivat HaRambam, and we see that the Rambam paskined against the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Avadya says we have a right to overthrow the Shulchan Aruch, because there's no doubt, had the Shulchan Aruch seen the Rambam, he would have paskined that way. And he quotes the Chidah dealing with the Mordechai and the Marami Wittenberg. He deals with Halacha Lemaisa She'asur Lishkov Shchivat Keva Baliyah Shel Gabi Beit HaKneset She'hu Tashmish Shel Gnai Ve'efshar Shaliyat Beit HaKneset Dom Alachechel She'nitkadshu Ve'kein Pasak Maran B'Shulchan Aruch Orechayim Kufnun Aleph Sif Yud Bet Yesh Li Zom Yishtamesh Baliyah Shel Gabi Beit HaKneset Tamish Kavu Shel Gnai Kagon Lishkov Sham V'yesh Lishtapek B'shah Tashmishim Im Mutal Lishtamesham. So you see, there's an entire question here. When you build a shtibel, you become a Hasidic Rebbe. Zev will tell you Hasidic Rebbe has one advantage. He owns the shul. The Balabatim can't throw him out. When you build a shtibel, you are in charge. However, there's only one problem with a shtibel. What do you do on top of the synagogue? Does the Aliyah have Kedusha? Are you allowed to make a bedroom on top of the shul? Imagine you build a shtibel, and right on top of the shul, that's where the beds are. That's where you sleep at night. Are you allowed? So he quotes here, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that you're not allowed. You're not allowed lasot tashmish shel gnai. In other words, to permanently put beds there. And he bases it upon a Mordechai, who says in the name of the Maram. And the Chidar is Meir that he found the Kavdiyat of the Rambam that was later published in Shelet Shivet Pe'er Hadar, Sheposak Lehejla Hatir, Chutz Mimakom Shel Agabi Aheichal. That the Rambam was making, you can make a bedroom on top of a shul, there's no Kedusha that goes up to the Aliyah, only not on top of the Oren Kodesh. And Katav Chidah, Shepsha She'ilu Haya Roem Maram Tshuvat Rambam Haya Chozebo, V'nire Pashut Zelishono, Ilu Haya Roem Shemaran אילו היה רואה תשוב את הרמב״ם, בוודאי שהיה קובע הלכה כמותו. And he says, the Chiddush says, that if the Mordechai had known the tshuva to Rambam, perhaps he would have changed his mind. And he says, the Machabe and the Shulchan Aruch, Allah at kama vakama, 1,000,000% would have certainly changed his mind. So you see, it's not so simple. He's 100% certain, yes? He brings in so many Svadish Svarim that the Mechaber, if it's something open in the Rambam, which the Riff and Rush didn't disagree with, the Mechaber would never go against the Rambam. That's what he says. He says the Mechaber would have been Mekil. You see? And here we're not dealing with Chumrah. Here we're dealing with Kula. And by the way, it's interesting that in all these shtibbles they have normal apartments on top of the shul. I don't know if they have a bedroom. They probably can't have a bedroom if they have to follow the psak of the Mechaber, but the Ramah. But nevertheless, look how you have this question, and look how it would turn around 180 degrees according to Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. Okay, so gentlemen, the question hangs fire. Halacha l'maisa, I'll say something which I think will handle Evan and Avi's what their strictures were. I'll say something halacha l'maisa. And we'll come back to this time and time again. The problems have, do me a favor, please close this door. The problem here is a delicate problem. On one hand, there has to be freedom of inquiry, freedom of research. On the other hand, there is a Masorah, there is a tradition. On the other hand, imagine you find a Ktav Yad from the Rambam, from the Rashba, from the Mordechai, from the Miri. How can you dismiss it? So they had hard mazel, they had mazlom lo sichek lehem, but how can you dismiss it at kidei kach? And you know what I think the answer is? I think the answer is someplace in the middle. And I think anyone who's ever passed into halacha will understand what I'm saying. It's not just to dismiss it. It becomes a sniff. I cannot overthrow an established halacha. But as a sniff, I can accept it. And what do I mean by a sniff? And we'll come to that time and again in the next 10 years. When I have to build the case in Psak, sometimes I build the case on many shitot, many snifin, many sveikot. I have every right in the world to say, but the Rambam Paskin, you're allowed to have a bedroom on top of the shul. I can't say halacha l'maisa, I'm going to Paskin that way, but if there are other factors involved, it's a small house. And if he won't utilize that room, he can't live upstairs. Let him not make a bedroom. Let him make a living room. A living room already, even though some of the achronim were mafukpuk, but ad kibetach, we can be samach on the Rambam. Follow me? That's what we mean a sniff. And I'll prove to you I'm right. Tell me, where did this whole discussion begin from? Where did this whole discussion begin from? This discussion began from a psak of the Rambam in Choshen Mishpat. Now, it's very interesting. Choshen Mishpat is different than all the other Chelkei Shulchan Aruch. Why? Because in Choshen Mishpat, you're dealing with monetary factors. Whenever you deal with monetary factors, you have a cloud that you have to live with. Hamotzi mechavero, olav haraya. And that means it's much harder to paskin there. You have to be more certain of what you're doing, because the person holding on to the money is always the muhzak. How do we say it in English? Possession is 9/10 of the law. And that means, after in Choshen Mishpat, the person that's holding on to the money can always say, Kimli. That's what all the achronim say in this halacha. Kimli means, look, I found the Shita of the Chuya that's like me. Prove that the Shita is wrong. And the minute he can say, prove that the Shita is wrong, you are in trouble. The person trying to get the money out of him is in trouble. So there's no question in my mind in Choshen Mishpat, the concept of Kitvayat, of Shita Techuyat, of new revelation, of a new Rambam, of a new Tshuva, of a new Ktavyat in Choshen Mishpat, it's infinitely more important than anywhere else in the Gimel Dalet, Gimel Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. And it's not by accident that the Mechaber dealt with this problem in Choshen Mishpat. Because in Choshen Mishpat, there's always a concept of Muchzak. And in order to get that money out of his hand, you got to be able to shake up the mountain. And shaking up the mountain becomes infinitely more difficult if the Machzik can say, Kimli, I found the Shita, I hold like the Shita. Prove that the Mechaber wouldn't have Paskin like the Shita. Prove that the Ramah wouldn't have Paskin like, if they only known the Shita, prove to me the Shita is wrong. You follow me, Evan? So that in Choshen Mishpat halachically, Eli, it's a lot harder to disregard a Shita Dechuya, to disregard something that's true, that you just discovered. You have every right to say Kimli. And this is what I say. Generally speaking, it would be a sniff. Exactly what a sniff means we'll come and discuss in great length. I don't want to get into it now because it would take the next hour or so. But in Choshen Mishpat in particular, if I may use the colloquialism, it's always a bone in your throat when you want a paskin. Because the machzik has it. And he can say, Kimli, it makes it that much harder to take the money out of his hands. And all of you know, most people don't give up money easily. Most people don't give up money easily. With all the Dinei Torah in the world, and all the surrender to Yahadut, and all the Choshen Mishpat Batei Dinim, something you have today which you never had before, nevertheless, there are always tremendous machloket, and a Talmud Chacham will always make a case, Kimli, I'm holding it, I hold this way, I found this sheet, to prove it wrong. And that's where Kitvayat will play a much bigger role than any other of the Gimel Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. Okay. So that's point number one of today's shiur, and we're continuing going into Psak and various concepts of Psak. But now we come to one of the most important concepts of all, the Shulchan Aruch. And I spoke a little bit about this at the start of the year. I'll repeat what I said at the start of the year, and then I want to go into much more detail. And what we're about to say, of course, is overwhelmingly fascinating and so basic. Again, the question comes up, you're studying your Adaya, everyone here is studying your Adaya. What do you mean you're studying your Adaya? It's unbelievable. Study Chulin. Study the Rif. Study the Rash. Study the Rambam. Study the Torah. Study the Beis Yosef. How can it be to get Chetah Horah, you're beginning with your Adaya? And it's not just on your Adaya. In Israel, they give a smicha on Orach Chaim, a Ketav Rabbanan. In America, I don't know of any yeshiva that gives a Ketav Rabbanan anymore, but in Israel, you want to know Hilchat Shabbat, you study Orach Chaim. Why? My daughter became a Tawenet Rabbanit. I think you know that. I get a Mazel Tov. She successfully passed her orals, and the Rabbanim, whatever the reasons are, they have to acknowledge her class, the first class, and she already got the bill for the license. And as my daughter says, in Israel, when you get a bill to pay money, you know that it's serious. It's like we used to talk about in the old days when it took used to order a telephone. It took 2 years to get a telephone. You know when you knew it was serious, when you got the bill to pay for the telephone. So she got the bill now to pay for the license. So Baruch Hashem, you know it's serious. To become a Tawenet Rabbani, my daughter had to take exams in parts of Evanesa, parts of Choshen Mishpat, Ribono Shel Olam. What's going on here? Evanesa, Choshen Mishpat, Yoredeya, Orach Chaim, own our lives. Why? If I get a Shela, where do I begin generally? The Shulchan Aruch, why? So I explained to you, this is what I spoke about with the Rav many times. I heard it from him in the 50s, and I was zeichet to speak with him in great length when I knew how to learn a little bit. You understand, there's a big difference when you're a kid and you hear shurim from the master, and you don't even start to comprehend the depth of what the Rav is saying, And then when you're much older, you've learned so many decades, and you can talk already with the Rav. So I was zeicher to discuss this with him in great detail in 78, and his mind yet in 78 was perfect. You should know that. The starts to slip already. 1980, I would say, is the turning point. You follow me? 1980 is the turning point. But 78, he was absolutely sharp, terrific. So the Rav, and it's the Rambam I told you about. Look into the Rambam, and if you disrambam, you have to know by heart. Ribbono shel Olam, I wouldn't allow you even to walk in for smicha b'china. What good does it do Yiddishkeit if you know how to slaughter a cow, if you don't know what Yiddishkeit is all about? It's the Rambam, Daktama, the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam raises the whole problem. Why do we accept the maskanas of the Gemara? Ribbono shel Olam. Yaakov Elish is a nice boy, he's getting married to a girl who's going to Bar Ilan, and they decided that since Bar Ilan is near Tveria, they're going to have chicken and milk. They're going to cook chicken and milk like Rabbi Yosef clearly, the Morad Asher of Tveria. What's wrong? What's wrong? It's a good question. What's wrong? Decide. Shlomo Holman is a mole, and he decided he's going to ride to a Britain Shabbat if the Brit is too far. Like who? Like Rabbi Yosef, of course. What's his thing? Nishita Machshiri Mila Madoichis Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuflamet, Kuflamet Aleph, Pikir, Rebbe Lezer, Yerofma, you with the Sigyas, and Dafke Hizir. You know what the Gemara says? That all the other cities the Romans made a Gezer against to wipe them out, and they can't do Brit Mila. And Dafke in his city, you're allowed to continue to do Brit Mila. So shows you, the Hashgacha Pratit, nothing wrong. So Shlomo Holman and Nathan Goldberg hold like Rebbe Lezer. So what's wrong with this? What is wrong with what I'm saying? By the way, as I told you, in Philadelphia, there was a mole, he's dead already, I'm not mentioning his name, and he rode to Britat on Shabbat. That was, and he considered himself Orthodox, and he passed him like Rebbe Eliezer. That was the Yiddish kind of the 40s into the 50s. You could get away with it. I hope you can't get away with it today, but who knows? Do what's wrong with this? So the Rambam raises this very question, Akdamah Mishnah Torah, and he says that when it comes to the maskanot of the Gemara, hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. And once you reach that concept of consensus, we cannot overthrow it. And this is more than a rove. Evan and Avi, what you asked me before, if you're with me, Evan, this is more than a rove. This is consensus. This is consensus. So the Rav said that this is something that happens not only once. What the Rambam talks about, consensus, happens time and again. And the Rav said the same thing with the Shulchan Aruch. If I may quote the Rav, I'm not saying you can't paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, but you better know full well what you're doing, because in relation to the Shulchan Aruch, hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. Okay, and I spoke about this. Why? I remember I raised the issue. Why? I don't know why. There's a lot written why. I'll only give you want my theory. I think it's a dual factor. One, of all the Sifrei Psakim, what Sefer Psak was written in Eretz Yisrael? The Shulchan Aruch, the only one. We Jews love Eretz Yisrael. There was something different. I mean this sincerely, please. There's emotion in Torah too. We love Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam was written in Galus. The Torah was written in Galus. The Shulchan Aruch was written in Eretz Yisrael. The Jews love Eretz Yisrael. Even today, you go to Borough Park and every other house, there's a sign up that the Golan is b'sakana. I'd rather travel in the Golan and see signs that Borough Park is b'sakana. Got it. Big fighters there. Borough Park, Kugarten Hills. The big fighters for Yehuda v'Shomron. Avi, that's part of the reason. But there's a second part. That's the irrational. Now the rational. No, you tell me the rational. Every Sefer Psak was written for Ashkenazim or Sfardim. The Shulchan Aruch was the only Sefer that within a few years the Ramah put the tablecloth on it, and as Yaakov understands me already, you had a Sefer for everybody. Think what I just said, Jay. Do I make sense or not? Right away. It's an amazing thing. Every other Sefer, you want it, you don't want it, Morty wants it, Morty doesn't want it, you have choice, you don't have choice, you're going to hack it, you're not going to hack it. It's your minute, it's not your minute. It's like with a like at the Coco Friday night, I have a grandson, Rosh Mitzvah Coco Friday, so he damas Nesuch Sfarad, his father damas Sfarad. So I told him, Roe, get me whatever city you want. It doesn't matter to me. I can hold an Ashkenaz in my hand. As far as I know, most of the davening by heart. What's the big deal? I'm not going to say Yismach Moshe Friday night. I haven't said Yismach Moshe all my life Friday night. It doesn't matter. Ribbono Shel Olam, Sfar, Ashkenaz, what's the big deal? By my age in life, I can even deal with the... If the Hodu is before Baruch Shamas, I'll say it my way and I'll redo the Siddur. I'll flip a few pages. But the greatness of the Shulchan Aruch is what they tried in the Israeli army, Nisach Achid. Except in the Israeli army, it failed. You know, the joke in the Israeli army is Nisach Achid means in every shul in the army, whatever the Chazan davens, that's what the people daven. Whenever I was in the army for Shabbos, we would go out of our way to have every different davening. Friday night we'd have Sfarad, Shabbos morning, Eidot HaMizrach, Musaf would be Ashkenaz, we'd have every different type of Chazan. And everyone had a Safa. That's what we used to joke. Nisach Achid means we daven every type of davening and everyone sits together. That's the Achid. Because it failed. You just couldn't force people to give up their Nuschot. But the Shulchan Aruch did it, because ingeniously, the Rama put the tablecloth on, his Shkimolem Kol Yisrael. Now, I want to make one point today, and I told you I would make this point. It's not that the Shulchan Aruch was accepted immediately. There was a bitter battle fought over the Shulchan Aruch. Must have taken 100 years until it received acclamation. Hiskima Lechem, we're not Russia or America. In Russia, everyone went to the ballot yesterday. The first time in the history of Russia, an absolutely free democratic ballot. I couldn't believe what I saw and the report. And it was first time in the history of Russia. We don't believe in that. We don't force. We don't democracy. Democracy and Judaism are the antithesis of each other. For obvious reasons. But it took 100 years. Now, where can you get all the sources on this? Here you go to Mishpat Avri of Professor Menachem Elon, as I've said to you more than once, one of the most illustrious graduates of Hebron Yeshiva. Hebron turned out fantastic people, but they can't boast about any of their great graduates. It's an amazing thing. Either they're Zionist, or they're Chokrim, or they're Wissenschaft people. Hebron turned out the only yeshiva to turn out a president of the state of Israel, and they can't boast about it. It's an amazing thing with Hebron. They turned out in the 30s, 40s, unbelievable. Shlomo Goren, geniuses, Reb Zal Jolti, one after another. Whoever they turned out, they can't really boast about it anymore. In his volume, you'll have it all. I only want to give you a little bit of a feeling of the machloket. Look into the mashar. All of you learn Mashar, Reb Shlomo Edels. First of all, what is his name, Edels? Do you know what the name means, Edels? Edels, what does it mean? No? Barry, what's your wife's Hebrew name? In Hebrew. Yocheved, Joy, believe me, her real name is Edels. Edels. Anyone named it? That's a nice Yiddish name. All right, I know. Lo Alena, we don't perpetuate these names anymore. I'm as guilty as you. I also couldn't name my kids Peset Sipper, Fekish Trimel. It's a little bit hard. So, how come the Mashar has a woman's name? See, I want to show you. Look, look, look. You are brilliant fellows. You are rabbis. You're the heart of YU. You've studied with Gedolei Yisrael. You've learned the Mashar. Mark has learned Mashar 52,132.5 times. 0.5. He did half a Mashar and his girlfriend called him. He couldn't finish it. And you don't even know his name. Now, see, the Rebbe's going to give you a gift for coming. Rav Shmuel Edels, his mother was a widowed. She raised him single-handedly. Many times, the minig was to call a person by his mother's name when she was Moseret Nefesh to raise him. Rav Shmuel Edels means belonging to Edel. You follow me? She raised him. Can anyone give me another example? The Be'er Hagola. What's the Be'er Hagola's name? Rav Moshe Rifkis. What does Rifkis mean? Raised by his mother Rivka. Okay? So the Mashar, look into Masechet Sota, Daf Chav Bed Amid Aleph, and you won't believe your eyes. The Gemara in Saita, Saita Chaferam Rav Tana, the Gemara says, HaTanayim Vale Olam, Tanayim destroy the world. Oh my God. There's a Mavale Olam cycle by What do you mean they destroyed the world? Tanaim destroyed the world?
Amar Ravina, Shemoyrin Halacha Mitoch Mishnaton.
That they paskan Halacha from the Mishnah. They destroy the world. What does this mean? Look into Rashi.
The Kiv in the Ein Yodim Tameha Mishnah. Pormim Gormim Shemedambim Ladova Shemedambim
the Mashah is beautiful. The Rashi is beautiful. And Rashi says, you know what it means, Tanayim destroyed the world? When you're a puppet, when you repeat a Mishnah, and you don't really understand the Mishnah, you repeat like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. This is what the Mishnah says. Boom, 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 boom. Someone asks you a question. And instead of understanding the Mishnah and applying it logically, you simply try to parrot the words of the Mishnah and you paskin incorrectly. Because the case you're being asked is different than the Mishnah. The logic is different. You have to think. You have to be like the Maram Shikeli. Like your great-great-granduncle. Avi, this is the Gemara insult that Tanaim destroyed the world. When they don't understand the Mishnah, don't know the logic behind the Mishnah, and just take it verbally and try to repeat it and apply it. Do you know what the Mashal says? You won't believe your ears. Ubedarat halolo, oton shemorin halacha mitoch shulchan aruch. Vaharei hem ein yodim tam hanyan shel kol davar. Im lo yedakteku mitchila bedavar mitoch hatalmid shu shimush hatalmidei chachamim. Vitaut nafal behoratam. Harei hem becham avalei olam.
Look at those words he says. In our times, those people that paskin from the Shulchan Aruch are destroying the world. They're exactly what the Gemara is cursing out, what the Gemara is maledicting. And he says, why? Because they don't understand, they don't have the sources, there's no shemesh, they didn't work out the makarat. And chas v'chalila, if they won't understand and they won't know, then they'll go and paskin the way they'll paskin, and they'll make a mistake, because they'll take the Shulchan Aruch literally, verbose, verbally, exactly like the Tanoim who take the Mishnah. You can't parrot the Shulchan Aruch. You have to know the Tanim. You have to know the Shemush. And that's the Mashar. And the Mashar was not the only one. There was a tremendous attack upon the Shulchan Aruch. See, the Lavush. The whole concept of the Lavush was to give reasons. The Shulchan Aruch Paskin didn't give reasons. Depended upon the Beit Yosef. Sometimes he changed his mind from the Beit Yosef. Never explained why. Elon gives many examples. You look into Elon. He's a first-rate Talmud Chacham. He's a very nice individual. He's an individual human being. He's a very fine individual. I mean, he's a man who achieved great success. Not so simple to be a professor at Hebrew U, Mishpat Avri, establish the whole department, then put it on the map, go on to the Supreme Court as a justice, and he commands even the leftist press there when he just retired, even the leftist press and all the articles about him only had nice things to say. But this Mishpat Avri, it's a classic work. I cannot praise it enough. It's the only work I know that accepts Torah Shabbat Pem and Shemayim thoroughly and completely and honestly, and yet was able to produce a scientific work. There are other works that are too frum or too scientific. In his work, there's a total balance without compromise, in my opinion. I'm overwhelmed. I've often asked why in the yeshiva world they don't. I mean, it's really a book of history, but they tell me because the yeshiva world can't cope with the problems he raises. But I can highly, highly recommend it to you who live in, you know, a dual culture and are not frightened of something that has, it's a jurisprudence approach, you know what I'm saying, of jurisprudence on an international legal system, and yet totally in conformity with Torah and Mitzvah. And he gives, he'll show you the whole machloket. But the Mashar is a classic example. Look at these words. Look at these difficult words. So it didn't happen overnight. It took about 100 years until the Shulchan Aruch was finally accepted. Now, obviously, I'm going to pick up right at this point next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, and the first part of next week's lecture is overwhelmingly, unbelievably fascinating. You'll see, it's the Rav, his family, the attitude towards the Shulchan Aruch,
But let me reiterate. What did we do today? The heart of the lecture was the Chazon Ish, was the Mikhtavim of the Chazon Ish. And when all is said and done, the Chazon Ish remains idiocentric. You don't have to add up. You don't have to bow to anyone. Rov no longer plays a role once the original Beit Din is ended. And who knows where the Rov is with the Kitvayat, what we do discover, what we don't discover. And a Rov, you can have a Rov, but really it's not a Rov at all, because it's all the Talmidim of the Chatam Sofer, the Maram Shik. So 1,000 Talmidim did like the Rebbe. But nevertheless, this is the Mesorah, and we have to contend with the Mesorah. And I explain to you, this is why the Chazon Ish would not attend that meeting. He was criticized for it. Of course, there was Pikuach Nefesh involved. It's not like Shemitah or some other issue where you can take this viewpoint and that viewpoint and be machmir and yes be machmir and not be machmir and be mekil. But here you are dealing with fasting 48 hours. And 48 hours, you know how difficult it is to fast 25 hours. Imagine what it's like fasting 49 hours. And the people, halacha l'maisi, you're dealing with pikuach nefesh, and the yeshivish world the yeshivish world. It didn't matter what Rav Tukachinsky said, and what Tzvi Pesach Frank said, what Rav Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog said. If the Chazon Ish differed, there were going to be many who were machmir. And they took the Chazon Ish to task, because you should have come, and you should have been involved in the machloket, and should have presented your point of view. And I know, I yet met people in the 60s here who were still angry at the Chazon Ish for what happened in 1941. See, I still had that living tradition. But you'll find part of it, even though B'nai Brak publishes everything and tries to sanitize Jewish history, nevertheless, you'll find traces of this, that there was anger at the Chazon Ish. But nevertheless, he was lo l'fishitato. What rove? When rove? Each Talmud Chacham has to think it out, pass him the way he wants, and those that want will follow him or follow the others. I showed you the Mishnah Lachat, and he too gets involved with that which is the Mesorah. It just supports what I said last week in the Chazon Ish, etc. Rav Ovadia seems to feel that a tshuva, the Rambam, and I gave you an example with sleeping on top of the shul, very fascinating. There's no question that in Dini Mamonet and Choshen Mishpat, there's no question that a Shita Dechuya or Ktav Yad will make it infinitely more difficult for you to take money, because there's a concept of Muchzak. It's not like Eben Ezra, not like Hoshe, and not like Orachayim, not like Yeradeya. It's a concept of Muchzak. Hamotzi Nechmer Olav Haraya has a right to say Kimli, and prove to me I'm wrong. Okay. But there's no doubt in my mind, and I know that Evan Barth doesn't understand me entirely, but I will come back to it in great detail for many, many weeks and years to come, that there's no doubt in my mind that a Shita found in a Ktav Yad, which the Shulchan Aruch didn't see, I agree it can't overthrow the Halacha, but it certainly can be a sniff when you're building a Heta. Then we got involved in what is the Maimar of the Shulchan Aruch, and we left off at the Mashar with the opposition, but I'm going to build upon this next week, Bezrat Hashem. Gentlemen, whoever wants a copy of the Rakafet Aron, step over to the desk, and I'll be very happy to give you one. I want to thank you up in the Ram Mahat of coming. It meant a lot to me to be able to say Shia today, because I'm going to miss 2 weeks in January, and this way I can pay you in advance. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we are in the Rav's talk on Erev Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we're going to deal with unbelievable material and see what the Rav did with it. And I want to wish you all a very Freilich and Chanukah, and a good Rosh Chodesh, which should be Besorah Tova, the land of Al Kol Yisrael, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Thank you.